Welcome. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Ross, Judge Bjorkman, Judge Bryan, the Honorable Kevin G. Ross presiding.
Good morning, all, and welcome to the Court of Appeals, or welcome to wherever you are this July 22nd panel of the Court of Appeals. As the parties are aware, and I'll state just for the record, that the Minnesota Court of Appeals is declining to hold oral argument live at the Judicial Center or in the other locations where we typically hold oral argument, and we're doing that for the good and safety of the public, the parties, the attorneys, court staff, and others in light of the ongoing national emergency arising from the pandemic. And we're holding this oral argument by a web video conferencing tool, WebEx, with none of the parties present in the same location. So counsel, just so you are aware, if you haven't used this technology before, there may be glitches from time to time. If it becomes difficult for you to hear, or you lose contact with any one of the judges, please just alert us and we'll pause the oral argument so we can let the technology catch up to us so we can figure out what's going on. I know that one of our counsel today is not available to be seen and cannot see us, but if counsel, if you are having problems, you waving at your computer is not going to do any good, but we'll try to figure it out if you lose contact. But our rules remain the same. Each side will have 15 minutes to present your argument with 5 additional minutes to appellant's counsel if you'd like to use that time for rebuttal. And because we're not videotaping this recording or this hearing, but we're only saving it by an audio recording, please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument so we can keep track of who's making which argument in the audio recording of things, which we will make available to the public online. All right, with all that rambling, counsel for appellant, whenever you're ready to proceed, you have the floor.
Thank you. May it please the court.
I guess I should say what we're here for. The first case on our calendar this morning is Zimmer versus Schulenburg and Kornfeld. All right, go ahead, counsel. Now you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court and counsel, Matt Barber for the appellant, Michael Zimmer, as trustee for the next of kin of Prince Rogers Nelson. This is a specific personal jurisdiction appeal. This appeal is all about Kornfeld's contacts with the state of Minnesota and whether those contacts form the basis of Zimmer's wrongful death claim against Kornfeld. Because the allegations in the complaint form the basis for this medical malpractice wrongful death claim, Zimmer respectfully asks this court to reverse and remand so we can litigate this case with the district court. Just to emphasize Zimmer's burden and the legal standard here, the burden for Zimmer is low and the legal standard is favorable to him. The allegations in the complaint are taken as true. The inferences drawn from those allegations are drawn in Zimmer's favor, and his burden is only a prima facie showing. This means his allegations and inferences are viewed without any countervailing allegations. And this court's standard of review is de novo, meaning it owes no deference to the trial court's decision.
Mr. Bayless, can I focus your attention on one element, just big picture? Am I correct that I think your brief lays out essentially two different alleged contacts with the state of Minnesota from which you're alleging specific personal jurisdiction, not general jurisdiction, one being the communication by phone and the other being, if I can quote your brief correctly on page 18, it is, quote, the airplane flight directed at Minnesota.
Those are the two contacts generally stated, yes, Your Honor. And this is Mr. Barber, not Mr. Bayless.
Oh, Mr. Barber, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That's right. So help me to understand how the second of those two, the airplane flight directed at Minnesota, provides specific contact with the state of Minnesota such that the contact itself is the thing from which the lawsuit arises.
Yes, Your Honor. So in paragraph 21 of the complaint, which is part of the record at addendum page 21, we lay out the specifics about what was the purpose of that flight and why that flight occurred. So on that plane was an agent of Kornfeld. It was his son, Andrew Kornfeld, who was sent into Minnesota to administer medications to Prince in Minnesota. So it was Kornfeld was purposely availing itself to our transportation system in furtherance of treating Prince in the state of Minnesota.
Right, but am I correct that there was never any contact between that agent, the alleged agent, and your client, that from which we any contact about which we can say that contact was the basis for the lawsuit?
Yes. So we allege that it was medical negligence for Kornfeld to send his agent into the state when this was a medical emergency. Prince needed care immediately, and that was relayed to Kornfeld through Prince's agents. And instead of following what we've alleged to be the standard of care, Kornfeld untimely sent an unqualified and unlicensed agent into
right,
the state of Minnesota.
If there was no contact between the agent and your client, why would it matter whether or not he was qualified? I guess it seems like your complaint is alleging that what the behavior of the defendant was sending someone into Minnesota that wasn't qualified, but the act of sending occurred in California. Am I correct?
The direction or the inference drawn is that the direction was given in California, but it was directed into Minnesota to treat a Minnesota resident.
And how did that contact harm your client?
It was untimely. It was too late. It should have been done earlier, or Kornfeld should have told Prince or Prince's agent to seek emergency medical care in the state of Minnesota because it was relayed to Kornfeld that Prince was in critical condition.
No, I'm talking so about the. I'm not talking about the phone conversation now. I'm talking about the airplane flight.
Right. The airplane flight is part of the negligent medical treatment. So the airplane flight shouldn't have been just the airplane flight. What we're alleging Kornfeld should have done is tell Prince to get immediate medical care in the state of Minnesota.
I understand that. I don't want to confuse the liability issue with the jurisdictional issue. So my questions go as to the contact with Minnesota. And I understand you're saying that he should have done something else, but I gather, are you acknowledging that there was no contact between the agent and your client, which we can say those circumstances of that contact caused the client's injury?
So what we've alleged that Kornfeld did is he sent his agent into the state of Minnesota for what he thought would be treatment for Prince, and that sending was untimely and was not up to the standard of care, but it was still directed into Minnesota at a Minnesota resident as part of what we've alleged is the negligent medical treatment here. So Andrew Kornfeld didn't have any physical contact with Prince that we've alleged, but we've alleged that the sending of this agent into the state was part of the malpractice that we've alleged. So it was
just so we're clear, nothing the agent said or did caused any injury from which this lawsuit arises.
The agent's directions were given by Kornfeld, and those
Let me get you to answer the question specifically, and you can elaborate if you like to. Do you agree that nothing the agent did or said caused any injury to your client from which this lawsuit arises?
We would disagree with that.
What did the agent say or do in Minnesota that caused harm to your client?
So the agent's arrival was untimely, and the agent wasn't qualified or licensed to dispense the prescriptions he had with him on the plane to treat Prince.
Mr. Barber, doesn't that just put us back into the gist of your argument, and that is that the Kornfeld defendants didn't properly respond to the telephone conferences that they should have said, get Prince to a facility right now, as opposed to delaying and sending somebody who ultimately didn't make it in time? mean, isn't that, I don't know what the delay happened. The delay didn't other than the fact that they should have acted a different way sooner, which I think is the gist of your complaint. The fact that someone, Andrew Kornfeld, ultimately arrived in Minnesota but never had any contact or did anything seems to me irrelevant to the question of jurisdiction. Why am I wrong about that?
So his not being licensed to practice medicine or qualified to give the medication, that's important because that would be medical malpractice in the state of Minnesota. So had Prince survived a bit longer, it would have been medical malpractice for an unlicensed and unqualified agent to essentially practice medicine on a Minnesota resident in our state.
So I guess I understand your argument. You're saying that if something else happened, if the agent would have prescribed medication, there would have been another basis for your lawsuit. Yes?
That would be an additional allegation we would have made. That's correct. But the agent was acting on behalf of Kornfeld, who had already decided what his course of treatment for Prince was going to be. And that's negligence directed into the state of Minnesota at a Minnesota resident.
So my question along the same lines is, we're looking at that third factor about connection between the cause of action and the contacts with Minnesota. This is Judge Bryan, since you can't see me. The question I have is, it sounds almost like, and I'll boil it down, maybe oversimplify the claim here, but it's almost like the claim is that Dr. Kornfeld himself didn't come, and either Andrew or Dr. Kornfeld should have come sooner and should have had actual contact with Prince. In other words, it's the fact they didn't have more of a contact with Prince that you're relying on to establish the claim. In other words, it's insufficient contact with Prince. That's the basis of the claim. Is there any authority or a case where insufficient contact with a party is sufficient contact for purposes of specific jurisdiction?
I don't know of any specific authority, but each personal jurisdiction case is to be resolved on its particular allegations. And that is essentially what we've alleged. We've alleged that a doctor using the correct standard of care would have done more, would have acted sooner, would have prescribed a different type of treatment, and wouldn't have delayed like Kornfeld did here.
Mr. Barber, I have another question going a different direction, and that is, the law distinguishes between acts of a party that are directed toward a resident of the state and acts directed toward the state as a state. How do you handle that distinction here? Or maybe rephrase, how did any of the conduct that you've alleged the Kornfelds have committed target the state of Minnesota as a forum?
So we're looking at purposeful availment, I think is what the court's looking at. And the context that we've alleged show that Kornfeld purposely availed itself to Minnesota residents for the purpose of providing medical care. So that's essentially Kornfeld availing himself to our economy, to the state of Minnesota's economy, so that he could provide medical services to our residents. He purposely availed himself to our transportation system as part of the treatment that he prescribed for Prince by sending his agent on this airplane. And he purposely availed himself to our...
Do you agree, Mr. Barber, that it was, in fact, Prince's agents that initiated this contact, and doesn't that make a difference?
We agree that it was Prince's agents who initiated contact, but we're looking at a medical malpractice case here, and context matters. We want people who are suffering from addiction or who are ill to contact their trusted healthcare providers and get the care they need. We're just saying that when that contact is made, the healthcare provider is supposed to use reasonable care in treating their patients, and that's not what happened here. Kornfeld essentially, after being contacted by Prince's agents, reached back into the state of Minnesota when he could have declined treatment or could have followed the standard of care, but neither of those things happened, is what we've alleged.
You cannot see the clock, but I'll just advise you that you have about 2 minutes and 45 seconds remaining.
All right. I'd be happy to field any last questions the court has. Otherwise, I'll just reserve my last 5 minutes for rebuttal.
I don't see any other questions coming your way, so thank you for your argument. We will turn now to the respondent.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Ken Bayless, and in this case, I represent Howard Kornfeld and Recovery Without Walls. The court's decision in this case is governed by the five-part test, and from the questions that the court has advanced, it's clear the court is well familiar with that test. I'd like to point out that the first factor in that test is the number of contacts with the forum state. And in this case, it doesn't get any better for a respondent than
the I'm not sure about that. I mean, when I read those factors, I mean, I know at times we've referred to them during specific personal jurisdiction cases, but aren't we really asking a very limited question when it comes to specific contact personal jurisdiction, where the real question is more about the quality and nature of the contact and whether the contact created a circumstance from which the cause of action arose. And isn't that all that matters in the federal case law dealing with specific personal jurisdiction?
Your Honor, I think there are three specific minimum contact standards. The first one is the quantity. The second one is the nature and quality. And the third one is the connection between the cause of action and the contact. So the first factor is indeed the quantity of contacts with the forum state.
I understand that. But when it comes to specific personal jurisdiction, the United States Supreme Court has said on more than one occasion, and it's established law, that even a single contact can be sufficient when we're talking about specific personal jurisdiction, which is jurisdiction that arises from contact that involves a circumstance from which the cause of action arises.
Well, in those cases, there's been a particularly strong showing on the other factors. There have been cases where the Minnesota court and the federal courts have determined that a single contact can be sufficient. But if you look at the analysis the court engages in specific jurisdiction cases, specific personal jurisdiction cases, it's looking to the number of contacts. So for instance, in the Bandemir v. Ford Motor Company, they're looking at the number of contacts that Ford Motor Company had, the 2,000 vehicles of the type at issue that were sold. Or in the Queen Bee case, another specific personal jurisdiction case that we cited below, they're looking at the 52 sales. Or in the Riley case, we're looking at the number of transactions where people actually purchased payday loans. And the number of contacts that occurred in connection with those payday loans. So I think it's clear that the Minnesota courts and the federal courts have historically analyzed the numbers of contacts.
Let me change the facts a little bit to press on that. Let's assume that there was a WebEx meeting between a lawyer or between a physician and a client in two different states. And during that one single consultation, the physician prescribes medication negligently and causes the death of the patient. Are you suggesting in that case that would not be the type of specific contact from which personal jurisdiction can arise because it wasn't numerous enough?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not saying that just because it's one determines the outcome of the court's decision. Instead, it's one of the factors the court looks at in entering its analysis. I think in the hypothetical the court gives, it's unlikely that there would be personal jurisdiction according to the jurisprudence that already exists. Because when you look at the other factors, you look to the question of the nature and quality of the contacts, you look at the connection between the cause of action and the contact, and you look at the question that the courts historically have looked to about the expectation that defendant would believe that he could be hailed into a foreign jurisdiction. In those circumstances, one would expect that there would not be personal jurisdiction. Well, and the cases that we...
Let me press you a little bit, if I can interrupt you. Because the question ultimately is fundamental fairness. Let me give you an extreme hypothetical to test your theory a bit. Let's assume we had a mental health professional in California that advertised predominantly on the East Coast rather than the West Coast, holding himself out as a crisis therapist, and offers a suicide consultation service online, but focuses on clients in Florida and New York, and not in California or close by. Clients call, he gives negligent advice in a single phone call, allegedly resulting, causing the death of individuals who call this, who use this suicide line, either through WebEx or Zoom or by phone. You're suggesting, I think, that that physician would essentially be insulated from liability unless these clients come to California to bring the lawsuit.
Your Honor, these personal jurisdiction cases are all decided on their own facts, and that hypothetical is dramatically different from the hypothetical that exists in this case, where there isn't even a physician-patient relationship. So for instance, in this case, what we had essentially was an overture to a relationship. We had
there is an allegation that this was enough to create a physician-patient relationship, isn't there?
No, there's no allegation in the complaint that a physician-patient relationship was created. Dr. Cornfield,
Mr. Bayless, our Supreme Court has held you don't even have to have a physician-patient relationship to support a medical malpractice claim. So
that's true.
What difference does that make? That there wasn't
that's true. I'm simply making the point that there is no physician-patient relationship that's alleged here. In fact, this is a case where there's actually no contact at all between Dr. Cornfield and Prince. Instead,
well, there is, because the allegation is that these are agents. And if we treat the agents as the principals, then there was contact.
Well, there was contact between agents of Prince and Dr. Cornfield, preliminary to a discussion about issues related to whether Prince would come to Recovery Without Walls in California and receive treatment in California. Now, the court is pointing, I think, to an important public policy consideration. So what's going to happen in this situation when Minnesota individual patients are contacted by parties in foreign jurisdictions? But the court also has to be sensitive to the competing and countervailing policy consideration. Do we really expect that when someone at Hazelden, for instance, is contacted, called up by someone, that means that they're going to be hailed into any jurisdiction in the United States when they're engaging?
Well, perhaps not hailed just simply by making the phone call, but I think the allegation is, and we have to assume these allegations are true, that there was a duty, that a physician in your client's shoes had a duty to communicate something other than what was communicated, and that omission to communicate based on that duty, that breach of that duty was the cause of the death here. And I just, when I look at the allegation and the complaint, we have to interpret and construe drawing inferences in favor of the plaintiff. The complaint says that your client provides chronic pain and addiction treatment to patients throughout the United States. And holds itself out as an expert in the treatment of opioid addiction. And that's the part that kind of that ties it to my hypothetical earlier, that it looks like there is some communication implied in that pleading, that allegation, that your client is promoting itself as someone who can treat all over the country individuals who are addicted to opioids.
Well, we have a facility in California that the patients come to where they receive chemical dependency treatment. We do have expertise, just as all the doctors in all the cases that we've cited have expertise in the particular specialties that they have. So in all the cases that we've cited from foreign jurisdictions involving physicians, they all have expertise in what they're a specialist in, whether it be dermatology or whatever else. So they have that expertise and they're having contact with these patients in foreign jurisdictions. The question that the courts have addressed is, does that meet the personal jurisdiction test? And we maintain that it does not in this particular case, where you're dealing with a single contact. I would like to address a question that the court advanced regarding Andrew Kornfeld and the role that that plays. If you look at paragraph 21 of the complaint, where they tie their cause of action to the conduct here, the only allegation is they should have said to Prince or to Prince's intermediaries, get thee to a treatment center or get thee to an emergency room. They don't take issue with what Andrew Kornfeld actually did. So the important third standard, that there be a nexus between the contact and the cause of action, doesn't exist with respect to those the Andrew Kornfeld dealings that have been addressed at such great length in the briefing.
What role do you think the purpose or intent of a person's actions should play here? If the purpose was to have actual contact with an individual resident of the state of Minnesota, but that for whatever reason didn't happen, how do we address the purpose in dealing with our specific jurisdiction standard?
Well, Your Honor, I think we look to the third factor in the minimum contacts test, which talks about the connection between the cause of action and the contact.
Fine. And let's assume that the purpose was for Andrew Kornfeld to himself administer medication he can't administer, right? So let's assume the purpose is lined up with the cause of action, but that never happens. For purposes of specific jurisdiction, what role, if any, does this intent to administer medications that you're not licensed to do, what role does that play in our specific jurisdiction analysis?
I don't think it's an important issue. I would note that there's no allegation in the complaint directed at Andrew Kornfeld. Instead, the allegation in paragraph 21 of the complaint is that what should have been done is that they should have told Prince through intermediaries to go to an emergency room.
Okay. Again, let's we have to look at the language of the complaint and inferences from it. So let's say that we're inferring that the claim itself is that Dr. Kornfeld sent his son to Minnesota to administer medication he's not allowed to administer, and that Dr. Kornfeld's intent or purpose was to have a contact that never happened. How do we evaluate that intent for purposes of specific jurisdiction, if at all?
I think that if you look at that third factor, it talks about a cause of action, and the intent you're talking about would relate to meeting the elements of a cause of action. And in this case, you can't have a cause of action because Prince was already dead. So in this case, that can't matter and cannot affect the outcome of the case. That would be my position.
Do we know the time? I guess I'm not sure if the complaint lays it out, and maybe we therefore can't get into it, but do we know the timing of the arrival of your client's son and the death?
Yeah, the complaint itself alleges that he arrived at about the time of Prince's death. So we're not sure if, you know, he was over Minnesota airspace at any time when Prince was still alive, but we know that he arrived in Minnesota at about the time of the death, according to the complaint. That's what we know. If the court has any further questions, I'm happy to address them, but we believe in this case that there have not been sufficient minimum contacts established, and consequently the trial court did not err, and that the court should affirm the decision of the trial court.
Doesn't appear as if any of the other judges has any questions, so thank you for your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for appellant, rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. For the record, this is Matt Barber beginning his rebuttal of the argument. Minnesota Supreme Court, as the court has pointed out, is clear that one contact is enough as long as that one contact forms the basis for the claim. Those are cases like McGee and Burger King. The Bandemir case that was cited by Kornfeld, that case had to look at a number of contacts that Ford had with the state, because the alleged conduct in Bandemir was not the same as the contacts with the state of Minnesota. So that's materially different as well. Looking at Kornfeld's negligent treatment, which is really the crux of this appeal, we've alleged that Kornfeld knew it was an emergency medical situation. Kornfeld, the inference is that Kornfeld didn't decline to treat Prince, and that Kornfeld did not follow the alleged standard of care, which would be to get medical assistance immediately. Instead, Kornfeld sent his agent into the state of Minnesota with the intent of treating a Minnesota resident. And that should be an important factor in establishing personal jurisdiction. There shouldn't be a lack of personal jurisdiction just because the defendant was fortunate that the plaintiff passed away in the process of committing medical malpractice. That shouldn't be what the law is in the state of Minnesota. As far as the physician-patient relationship goes, the court's correct. Warren versus Dinter holds that you don't need that for a medical malpractice claim. And even if we did, the allegations in paragraphs 9, 16, 17, and 21 of the complaint are enough to form a physician-patient relationship. The unpublished and non-presidential, non-Minnesota cases that Kornfeld relies upon have materially different allegations and facts than what we've alleged. Most of the cases that Kornfeld relies upon have the medical malpractice, the doctor, and the patient all in the same state, and then the plaintiff subsequently moves to a different state, and then the plaintiff tries to subject the doctor to personal jurisdiction in that second state. We don't have that. All of our alleged conduct has occurred in Minnesota while the plaintiff was in Minnesota. The other types of cases that Kornfeld relies upon are where the alleged negligent treatment and the doctor reside in one state, and then the plaintiff comes over from his or her home state into the doctor's state, receives treatment in that state, goes back to the plaintiff's home state, and then attempts to assert personal jurisdiction from that home state. Those aren't our facts.
Let me interrupt you for a hypothetical that might seem maybe even further left field than the other ones I've offered, but assume that you have a client who is suffering from a severe addiction and sends a letter to facilities in every state in the country asking for advice and seeking admission, inquiring about admission to their facilities. And each one of those facilities sends a letter back that expounds upon their own facilities, but doesn't provide any advice about what to do in an emergency situation that was communicated in the letter that was sent. Would that letter back to this, to the defendant or to the plaintiff, constitute personal jurisdiction to hail all of those institutions who failed to provide the proper warning to seek immediate medical attention? Would that be sufficient for personal jurisdiction in Minnesota?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. It sounds like in that hypothetical, they haven't accepted or given treatment. They've just talked about what their facility could offer. And again, the specific allegations of each case is important because ours timing was of the essence and the means of communications were essentially immediate, which is why it was a phone call instead of a letter. This kind of gets us to the district court's decision at addendum page 9, where it cites those four Northern District of Illinois cases for the proposition that preliminary negotiations don't create personal jurisdiction. But we've got more than preliminary negotiations. Kornfeld, we don't allege that Kornfeld said, you know, let us take this under advisement and think about if we can provide treatment to you or not, and in the meantime, go get immediate care. We've alleged that Kornfeld undertook to treat Prince, and that undertaking was done negligently. That's different than preliminary negotiations or being wishy-washy about when that treatment would occur.
I see where that assertion may tie to the sending of Kornfeld's son, but is there anything in the complaint that would suggest that the telephone conversation constitutes a consultation?
I'm just checking the complaint to make sure I've got the precise paragraph number, Your Honor. It was paragraph 16, which is addendum page 19. So we have alleged that Kornfeld was contacted on Prince's behalf by his agents regarding emergency treatment because of his acute and dangerous addiction. Prince's agents communicated
seeking advice.
Yeah, exactly. That, and providing that Prince was in critical condition and needed immediate specialized addiction treatment services.
Right. So they were seeking advice. My question is there anything in the complaint that would suggest that Mr. Kornfeld provided what could be considered advice? As opposed to, I'll send my son out there to explore whether this is a good fit for treatment or whatever actually happened.
On the next page, so addendum page 20, paragraph 17, we've alleged that all of the defendants, which would include Kornfeld, had an opportunity and duty to diagnose and provide treatment or advice for Prince's opioid addiction, and they failed to do so. And then paragraph 21, we've alleged that the standard of care would have been for Kornfeld to advise Prince to get immediate emergency care, but instead he sent his son with the intent, that's the inference, the intent to treat Prince by providing him with that medication that he was not licensed or qualified to provide.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bayless, Mr. Barber, for your arguments, for your briefing in this matter. And we will take it under advisement at this time and issue our opinion within the statutory period.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We are in recess.